This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. I'm J-Dog, and joining me now is a true renaissance man, in addition to being a wellness and health advocate, as well as an author and an athlete and a scholar, and also an advocate for education. He is also the president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio, Eddie Papowski's number one fan, the swell dresser himself, Mr. Tom Raphael. Tom, how are you?
Good, Jay. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. Of course, the Red Sox season is over, but so is the Cleveland Guardians. I know you're
with a new manager in tow coming.
Probably, and who knows, even with the Red Sox, if they
possibly as well,
yeah. If they move up Alex to the front office. But today I have another author joining me, Irene Bouchine. And of course, last week we also had Dr. Randy Pierce, who is also an author, Future Insight, and want to give a big shout out to Randy, because I got more and more feedback from his inspirational journey of losing his sight and still being a successful CEO and runner. And I think today we'll find this, you know, equally compelling and inspirational. So, Irene Bouchine, tell us about yourself. You're the author of Celia and the Little Boy, Children's Mental Health Advocate, mother, writer, speaker, and educator, and of course, mental health advocacy and awareness is one of my passions, along with oral health. But take your time and please give the listening audience a brief background on yourself and what led you to become a writer and an author.
Well, thanks, Tom. I would say I didn't have a game plan to become a writer or an author in any way, shape, or form. It started out mainly because when I was growing up, I had dyslexia. I couldn't even read. So the idea of writing or, you know, telling a tale on paper was certainly not what I was thinking about. And when you can't read and you're growing up through high school and all that, and people don't know that you can't read, you figure out other tools to use. And for me, I found out very quickly when I reflected around age 18 or so that I'm pretty resourceful. I think I'm creative, but who tells you you're creative? But I knew something was very different about me, and a piece of me didn't give up with all the failures I'd have to deal with and I had to deal with. But this other part of me just became very strong, and it was the creative part. So fast forward. Becoming a parent. And when I had my child, I had no idea that there were issues, that even the mental illness, mental health was a thing, because no one talked about it. But it was clear after, probably by the time my child was somewhere around 6 or 7, that there was a struggle going on that was different than what I was familiar with. I had my own struggles, obviously, but it was different than mine. And yet I couldn't really wrap it around anything. So what started to happen is, over the years, we started dealing with it more assertively, because he was losing ground in school. He was losing ground socially. He was losing ground. And it's always painful when you have anyone struggling that you love, that isn't feeling good about themselves. And in my situation, I felt as though there was a despair and a negativity in a 7-year-old that wasn't like the kids next door at all. So when I started to study it further or take it further, it was a long journey. There were doctors, there were therapists, there were schools, there were all kinds of efforts. But at the time in the schools, I would say that the biggest way to respond to children who were not, what was the word they used, not sort of tending to business according to plan. They usually targeted those children as problem children. And as a parent, it's frustrating, because if you know your kid, which is a big if you know your kid and you know they're amazing in a million ways, it's very painful to have people, because they're not marching down the path of the rest of the kids necessarily, to see that outsideness as bad, dangerous, troublesome, whatever. There's no question the behaviors are challenging, but the human was amazing. And that's kind of what I held on to throughout the years. And it was hard for my child. It was hard for me. But what was 100% true, and I remember, it's funny how you remember things. I was having my hair done one day, and my hairstylist said to me, I said, I was telling him, maybe my child was 13 at the time. I was telling him how hard this situation was at this time. And my therapist said, and that's why he's yours, because you're the one who can do it. And I thought, huh, I never thought about it like that before.
Yeah, that was pretty insightful and pretty deep. Now, before we talk about your son and the inspiration for the book, just a question. So the fact that you had dyslexia, did that, and all the workarounds that you and creativity that you had to employ to, you know, get through school with, you know, with that, if you will, learning challenge.
Yep.
Did that make it? I mean, obviously he was your son, so you're empathetic. But did that make it even more empathetic for you, because you sort of understood that, you know, how you have to be creative and workarounds? Did that help your experience?
It's a great question, Tom. It did. My insight to being an outsider, being left behind, so to speak, because there's no tools and people don't know what to do with you. They don't even know how to identify your problem. In fact, it wasn't until I was 19 till anybody identified what was the problem with me, my problem. But knowing, having the experience of that isolation, that loneliness, that fear, yeah, made a big difference in me recognizing what I was looking at.
Yeah, being the outsider, the loneliness, you really, how challenging, you know, that must have been. But here you are, a successful author and mother. So the book, of course, your son inspired it, but what were there some other inspirations, you know, for the book? And you can reach Irene at Irene Bouchine, Bouchine.com. So tell us about the inspiration for the book.
The inspiration for the book came out of the blue. I had started writing. Once I realized I had a lot to figure out about myself, I started writing memoir. It was a summer course that I took at Curry College in Massachusetts. And I met a bunch of other wonderful people writing about themselves. So there's no, it's yours. You're free to write whatever you want to write. And in doing all that work, it took me a long time of writing. That was 2006. I started writing, and I am still writing. I will always probably be writing. I maybe someday will be able to pull the memoir together. But it certainly is an advantage to study and to think back and to put on paper what you remember and what was real and how to reflect. So I was working on me and my own issues when one morning I was asleep. I woke up and I don't dream a lot typically. And I woke up and I had that morning dream sort of time. And I saw a little girl. So this is out of the blue. I saw a little girl sitting on a staircase. And I saw her and I went, huh. And I was still asleep, but then I started to wake up and I had this compelling urge to illustrate her. Like, who is she? And I put her on paper. I always had paper by my desk, and I am a creative. So I love to illustrate and draw. I mean, it's just part of the way I've always survived. And so I put I'd started illustrating her, and then I noticed she was distressed and she was going up the stairs and down the stairs and up the stairs. And I went, what is she doing? Who is she? So I noticed she was going underneath the stairwell, and underneath the stairwell, something was happening that was upsetting her. And then I grasped that there was a problem under there, a child under there. That was day one. I never knew where this story was going, but every day, as it's beyond the morning memories, as it started to develop, and I started, I even remember being out to dinner with my family and saying to my brother, was sitting, I don't know, I had this dream, I don't know what she's doing. He said, well, maybe she's this, and maybe she's that. I thought, we're discussing this inanimate person in my head. And I said, I know I need to follow her, but I don't know what it's about. So ultimately, it took 3.5 years. And I followed this little girl. I named her Celia. I don't know why. I followed her as she went down the stairs and fought to connect with this little person under the stairs. And that was the premise. That was the baseline of the story. And when it was all done, and 3.5 years later, maybe somewhere in the 2.5 year mark, maybe three, I looked at it, I read it, and I said, I think this is a nonfiction, I call it a creative nonfiction, but clearly it's fiction, but a creative nonfiction about what it's like to raise a child with depression. What is it like? And so I finished, and then I realized I recognized the story.
Yeah, with all your past experience. Wow. Well, this is so compelling. Celia and the Little Boy. The website is Irene Buchine, Buchine.com. Jay, I can't wait for the break to get over to talk about why this book is so relevant today and important for adults.
Absolutely. We're going to take the break. Northeast Delta Dental Radio. This week's guest is Irene Buchine, and she's author of Celia and the Little Boy. She's a children's mental health advocate, a mother, a writer, speaker, and an educator. And as Tom mentioned, you can go onto her website, irenebuchine.com. That's IreneBuchine.com. When we return, more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio here on the Pulse of New Hampshire. This is the Pulse of New Hampshire. I am J-Dog, and this week's edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio, the president and CEO and host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio. This week's guest is Irene Buchine. She is the author of Celia and the Little Boy. She is a children's mental health advocate, as well as a mother, a writer, a speaker, and educator. You can log on to her website, irenebuchine.com. That's IreneBuchine.com. And they'll have more information there.
Thank you, Jay. So back to you, Irene. So obviously, mental health is becoming more and more common to talk about. And as you know, One of my best friends and colleagues is John Broderick, who has spent a great deal of his last decade of his professional life educating the world on mental health awareness. And it's not just from the adult perspective, it's visiting schools. I've been on a number of visits with him to organizations, and it's amazing. You get into a room, and sometimes we used to start the talk with, well, how many people have been affected by mental illness, and maybe, you know, 25% of the hands go up, and then you might say family members, and then 2/3 of the hands go up. And by one more question, do you know someone with a, you know, mental health issue or whatever challenge, all the hands go up. So I think this book is especially relevant today. It seems like particularly since COVID, we're talking about it more, which is good, but there also seems to be more, you know, evidence about the need of this. So what's how does this book connect with children, but also why is it important for adults?
Well, and I just want to put another shout out for John, who has been such a support to me. And he is the first person who read my book, took it in, and said to me, this book belongs in every school in this country. It belongs everywhere. And, you know, I'm a little less, I mean, I don't know. I think the book is amazing. But when someone else who you respect so much says that, I heard it. The reason it's really helpful for kids, I think the biggest problem, the reason we're having so many terrible, tragic losses, not just struggles, but losses You know, it's been, you can Google statistics. It's not getting any easier, any better, bullying and all the reasons children are struggling, COVID, socializing. But the fact of the matter is that my objective in this story and the reason is, first of all, I don't think any child should be not, if we're not looking, we're not going to see. We need to start looking at our children more closely, because it's the ones that aren't being seen, that don't think anyone sees them, that are struggling the most. And talking about it, as you know, Tom, is critical. People wait, unfortunately, and I get so frustrated that people don't realize what they're looking at until there is a crisis. And then there's so much attention, but it's not that it's hasn't, maybe it's not, maybe someone tried really hard. It's an illness. Some people will not survive it. But other people don't survive it because they don't think there's any hope for them. And the reason Silly and the Little Boy is so important for children is, and I have quotes from children, but I don't want to take up too much time with my material, except to say that children see themselves in this story because it allows them to be the kid in the dark and to see that there's somebody seeing them. So even if they aren't being seen, if someone's reading this story to them, if they're reading it to themselves, it's this sense, wait a second. I have very, very tightly connected with a little one who asked me to read the book. I read the book and he already had the book. And when he asked me to read it, I got to the part where the little boy says, "That's a lie. You're a liar. I don't want to be here anymore." And he was saying the same thing. And it was like just the opportunity to say, I feel like that, as compared to, oh my God, you feel like that? Don't, you know, we can't feel like that. And the whole notion that parents want to make their children's lives better, or by doing that, not addressing the problems they see in front of them and trying to put, make light of it, or it's going to be okay tomorrow. I can't tell you how many people who my heart is with anyone who has children, my heart's out there for all people struggling with loved ones with mental illness, and if they have it themselves, I my heart goes out. The fact of the matter is that they are, the kids need to know that you can see that, and the adults need to know that they can talk about it. And this story allows adults to read about it and to say, because anyone can be Celia and anyone can be the little boy. And all it's really saying is, if you're looking, if you know to look, then you can make a difference. It's not news. Any adult can make a difference to a child's life, but with children with mental illness, you need to be working a little bit differently, a little harder. Maybe you can't get away with the stuff you can get away with many cases with kids who are healthy. Kids who are struggling aren't healthy. They're healthy in many ways, but they're not healthy in other ways.
Wow, this is so impactful. And I do hang out a lot with Justice Broderick, and he has a partner now, Jeff Levin, and they're really trying to, get the word out. So how do we, I know you've done a lot of speaking engagements, and, we've promoted the book and so forth.
Yes, thank you so much.
Oh, we're happy to. But how do you think we can reach John's vision and of getting it into, all schools? I mean, it would seemingly be such a, wonderful tool for students to know that, that they have a voice through this book. So how do we get the word out even more?
Huh. Well, first of all, follow the statistics that are now coming out. If anyone's listening and reading the news, then they actually know that the data is proving that the earlier we can start talking about mental illness, mental health, mentalness with our children, the easier it is for them to start thinking about it, or if they're having an issue, start talking about it, or if they are, if it can be not normalized, because that is not, illnesses are not normalized. Illnesses are illnesses, and everyone's are different. Cancer is different in everyone. Asthma is different. I mean, arthritis, whatever. When it comes to mental illness, it's different for everyone. So the point is that if they can start knowing that it's okay down the line, or they have a friend, or I think children should be given the opportunity to hear the word and not be afraid of it and look at it when they're six, five, six, seven, whatever, but not wait for crises. Then it's frightening. I don't want to be frightened that I have a mental illness. I want to know I can manage it. I want, just like asthma, I know that I have new, you know, new medications, new tools. This is such a huge problem, and yet it's starting to get, I agree with you, Tom, so much more attention, but it's still just a nugget compared to the attention all the other illnesses get. And we're still fighting the stigma and trying to say, wait a second, you know, everyone with mental illness isn't Daffy Duck. You know, I mean, you know, we're just humans on the bus with some adjustments we need to make with our lives.
You're absolutely right. And I love the way Justice Broderick says it, which is like, no one, you know, no, if you have diabetes or cancer, right, you know, no one's blaming you for that. And this is just, this is another illness that we need to talk about, you know, and address. And I think we've come a long way, but I agree with you. The journey still has definitely a long way to go.
Right.
And I think it's people like you, Irene, and Justice Broderick and Jeff Levin. And I know in my public speaking, even if my talk is on oral health or customer service or running, I always generally, you know, segue into mental health, because as you say, it's pervasive. And it's not just the really bad stories we hear of suicides. It's the superstar athlete, all A student that secretly inside is suffering, and so that person needs to have, you know, an outlet. So I know the feedback on your book has inspired you to do a lot more on this education.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, as well as future goals for your book. I just finished a book on running, and it just came out in June, and already people want me to write another chapter. So I'm not sure that that's what would be appropriate for Celia and the little boy. But what are your future goals for the book and for your educational work?
Well, for the book, I agree with John, and I agree with everyone that, you know, I'm only one little person. I'm not a company. I'm not an anything. I'm just an author, and I have books, and I hand them out, and I give them out, and I sell them sometimes. This is not how you make a living. Trust me. Because you just, who wants to sell my book to people? I want to give my book to people.
Right. I mean, you are amazing. I know we helped out a little bit, but I think it's such a great tool, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And it's the thing, it's like, it comes from my heart. And the only reason that I'm grateful when anyone buys my book, because certainly I need to have a life too, but my life is best served being out doing this, talking, encouraging other people. When no one asked me to write a discussion guide to go with my book, but I did, because when I've written two programs. One is, what do I say? When do I say it? And that's John Broderick and I did that together at the Boys and Girls Club. It was great. And that's because people don't know how to start the conversation with children. And the second one is a study guide that I wrote called Celia's Way, where we take the book apart. I was fortunate to have a psychiatrist from Harvard who has since deceased, unfortunately, but he took my book apart and put it into metaphor. There are 8 teaching metaphors in that book. Wow. That's the way you teach a story. Absolutely. You don't tell somebody what to do. You show them an experience and say, look, and that's why this children's book it's an open door for opportunities to talk. And right. I didn't plan it. You know, I mean, I didn't say, I think I'll write a book that has metaphor. That's how the creative story evolved.
And that's why, this difficult topic is resonating though through your book. Well, we could spend,
yes,
2 hours on Celia and the little boy, but we can't, yes. Jay, I know, but we got the word out. So why don't you give out the website and we'll go from there.
Okay. All right. Irene Boucheen is the guest this week on Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Her website is IreneBoucheen.com. That's IreneBoucheine.com, author of Celia and the Little Boy. She's a children's mental health advocate, as well as a mother, a writer, speaker, and educator. And this week's edition of Northeast Delta Dental Radio comes to a close. Fear not, we'll have another one next time here on the Pulse of New Hampshire. For Tom Raffio, president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and the host of Northeast Delta Dental Radio, as well as Irene Boucheen. I am J-Dog, and we'll be back next time here on the Pulse of New Hampshire.